Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Listeners, thank you so much for joining me today. We have Eric Kostelnik as our guest. He's the founder CEO of a company called Postal.io, which is an amazing concept, and I really, really love it. I'm not going to give away too much because I really want him to explain it. But the reason I had him on is because he's got a history of great exits out of companies. You know, so often we talk about what does it take to raise money? What does it take to talk to venture capitalists? All that kind of stuff. We seldom talk about what it actually takes to negotiate a good exit out of a company. So we've got Eric on today to talk all about it. I loved this conversation. I think it was fantastic. I'm a big fan of what this guy is doing. Highly recommend that you check it out. Enjoy. Eric, how are you?
Fantastic. How you doing?
Oh, man, I am so good. I am thrilled to have you on to talk all about your experiences and what you consider to be the most exciting parts of negotiating, specifically when it comes to like all the startups that you've been involved in and all the exits. You've got so much experience in that space and so much experience in M&A. Before we get into it, maybe you could tell the listeners about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. So I've been in technology sales and startup world for about 10 years. Prior to that, I was selling everything from power tools to cars to job postings. And I just found that making people a lot of money in my past, I'd kind of have enough of that, and that I wanted to make sure that I tried to make as much money for myself as possible. So challenged myself to get out to Silicon Valley and ultimately, you know, get into the startup world. So yeah, this will be my fourth startup that I'm in at Postal.io, and just happy to be here and share as much information as I can for your audience.
Yeah, man, we are super happy for you to be here too, because a lot of people wonder about obviously raising money, right? So when they're getting into startups, how do I get seed money? How do I go to Series A or Series B? But there's a ton of information that's lost on the back end of the conversation where people are like, okay, now I want to exit. Do I have an exit strategy? Most people don't even think about that. And then how do I exit? How does that negotiation even work? And so maybe we'll start the conversation with, when you have a negotiation that you want to start having the conversation of exiting, where do you even start that conversation?
Okay, so this is a big misinformation out there that you always hear founders say, and that is, yeah, we're not thinking about an exit right now, or an exit is not in our plan, or you know what, this business is not about an exit, we're going to IPO. So that is a complete fallacy. Every single founder that has started a business is looking for a way to sell the business for more than what it cost them to start the business. And every VC out there is looking for a 10x return on the investment that they made. So it's all about exit, actually. So if you're not positioning your business for an exit when you start the business, then it becomes infinitely more difficult when you try to actually exit the business. So, like, what does that actually mean? How do you prepare a business for exit when you just start or you haven't even raised capital? You have to really understand the dynamics of M&A and really understand the players within either the market that you're in or the integrations that you're going to have set up or the partners that are going to help drive education of your platform or provide value in the platform from a technology standpoint. And you have to identify your market of exits to start. And that over time will change because you'll find that other players will come within the market or have raised additional capital for certain things like an M&A situation. And you just need to ensure that you're setting it up from the beginning. So an example for us at TextRecruit, which was the last one that we did, we started forming our partnerships with all of the major vendors within the HR technology space from the beginning. And before we even had a product, we were talking to corp dev in every single major HR technology group. Yeah, it was hard to get those meetings, but M&A doesn't start when you're ready to exit. It starts when you start the company.
Right. And so when you're approaching all of these businesses to start having that conversation, is it literally that? Is it just the conversation of, okay, hey, we've started, you know our history, you know what we've done on these other businesses. Obviously, this is going to be an opportunity one day. Here's our goals. Here's our vision. Is that how you start the conversation? Or what does that dialogue look like?
So you have to understand within the org chart, actually where M&A happens as well. Within your industry, it's going to be different throughout whatever industry you're in. It's going to be different based on the size of business that you're managing. And then, you know, we're talking about strategic exits. There's also the P&E exits out there that obviously are going to be a different process. But the way that I look at it is that once you've identified those that can do the deals, because their jobs in these companies are like corp dev or business development in these businesses are to do deals. They have to get, you know, 1 to 3 to 10 deals done a year, however big they are. And that's their job. So they are interested in learning about the software that you've created if you're truly agnostic, right? And so I'm a big fan of creating agnostic software.
What do you mean by that? What's agnostic software?
So agnostic software means that you really can't pin it in a certain category. Like you can't really say like, hey, this is the category and this is where I'm going to compete with all these bigger players up there. What you want to do is you want to create an agnostic software that actually sits on top of all of those software. So it's almost like middleware is what we used to call it. Now we say integration software, right? So it's these platforms as a service, and then you can, you know, service different major platforms. And so, you know, in Postal's case, we have HubSpot, we have Salesforce, we have Outreach, we have Salesloft, Marketo, all of these systems that we've set up. And there's a reason why we're set up that way. We know that those are all the major players, and we know that they don't have direct mail and offline communication engagement within their existing platforms. Same thing with TextRecruit. TextRecruit was a communication and engagement platform through text message. All of those systems like Oracle and SAP and iSIMS and Ultimate Software, all of those softwares didn't have the components yet. So we were able to build these two agnostic softwares that sit on top. Same thing with Reich. Reich's a project management software. You sit on top of Microsoft. So you have to understand, if you're building a solution, how you actually can position yourself as a value add to the existing major players out there. So you can start putting the bug in their ears of like, no, this is by having this relationship. And you don't talk about exit from the beginning. You just, hey, this is what we're going to be doing. This is what we're focused on. And this is what we believe is going to be the most benefit for your business. And once you start executing on that vision, then you just keep on peppering them. Like, hey, just got our first 10 customers, got our first 100 customers, got our first $1 million in revenue, got our first $1 million deal. All of those things and that education of those corp dev folks and those people, that'll get you to a point later in time where you've built the relationship, you've built their trust, and they see you can execute. And then at that point, the exit just becomes a thing that happens, just like a close.
Almost like a foregone conclusion because you've
it's
already
a foregone up. Absolutely. And by the way, the more of those conversations you can have early on, those are not easy conversations to have, by the way. They're not easy meetings to get, especially if you're this tiny little company without any revenue or, you know, without any funding. But it's a sales process. And this sales process can be 10 years. It can be a 10-year sales process. But it is a process, and you need to ensure that it's repeatable and that you follow the process and that you're able to actually establish yourself as this value add and that they can see that you execute and that you did what you said you're going to do. And that's credibility, and that has everything to do with the deal getting done at the end.
One thing you mentioned there I find super interesting about, they're not easy conversations and the meetings are not easy to get. How do you get those meetings? If you're a nothing burger, right? Like you don't have a history of exits, like let's just say you do, you're thinking to yourself, okay, I think I've got something here and I want to talk to people, but how do I even start that process?
So you have to have the business set, your entity has to be set up, your structure, your ideation, your build, all of those things have to be set up if you don't have those relationships set. So you have to have a legitimate business, you have to have legitimate customers, you should have legitimate integration partners, and you should understand the value that your technology brings to those main players. That's the only way that you're going to get a meeting is by structuring a value proposition, right? So what is the value proposition of your business? It's just like you're selling your business to your product to a business, you're selling your business to a corporation. Mm-hmm. And so you need to ensure that you understand, okay, your foundation is set, your business is structured, you're up and running. And then it's just identifying who are those players at the table.
Identifying the target market and then prospecting to those people.
You prospect. That's exactly right. And a lot of times in order to get to a decision maker, you have to go high, deep, and wide.
Right.
Getting to a decision maker who can buy your business eventually, because that's what a corp dev manager does, or VP, you have to go through different locations. So a great example is the way that Salesforce is structured. Now, Salesforce has like 20 different arms of leadership and 20 different products that are in that. And their corp dev is actually structured in a way, so their deal flow comes from their venture capital arm, and it comes from their app exchange arm. Like, hey, what can Salesforce purchase that is in their apps and that is in their venture capital? So what's a great way to get to the corp dev side? Great ways to get in through your venture capital, go through the App Exchange. Guess what Postal's doing? Postal's going into the App Exchange. We've established relationships at the venture capital side. So you have to understand, it's like, there is going to be a target. You're going to want to know who makes the decisions, what their strategy is in the decisions that they've made in the past. So why have they done the deals that they've done in the past? And you have to align your business, not to necessarily support an exit, but support the fact that you might have a chance. Right. Because like, dude, 99.999 companies don't have a chance to get acquired. So how can you give yourself a chance? It's understanding really what that business is looking for in the next 3 to 5 years and understanding the deals they've done to ensure that you're structuring yourself in a way that you'd be a target.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. I love how strategic this is to everything that you're doing and how much research and time and preparation it sounds like you're putting into identifying the targets that you're going after. And I think for so many people, for whatever reason, they think of negotiation differently across all these different types of negotiations that we do. But what I'm hearing is the same thing that I hear from, let's say, a hostage negotiator, where it's research and preparation as much as you can to determine what the levers are, how you're going to pull those levers to make sure that you can get that person out alive. Same sort of situation over here with you. You're doing all the research that's required to determine who are the people we're dealing with, how are they going to respond to what we do, is this in line with what they've previously purchased, does this fit with their corporate values, all that kind of stuff to make sure that you have the most chance at success possible.
Yep, 100%. And, you know, I would say that trust is the key to everything. And if you've studied hostage negotiators, the main thing that they are trained to do is build rapport before they try to solve any situation. And they have to find, hey, what makes this person tick? How can I build rapport with this individual where they'll trust me? And then after you've built rapport, you have to do what you said you're going to do. And there's another thing that is really interesting through this whole entire process is that you'll find out eventually as you go through and you start this process, you'll find out actually who's good for you. Because a lot of times you don't want to date every single girl on the block. You're going to figure out, hey, man, this one's not meant for me. They're not aligned with my values and the way that I've built this company. And by the way, every single company that I've been a part of, that is my legacy in business. And founders who don't believe that the people that they hire and the products that they build and the processes that they've established and the M&As that they've done, that is going to be your lasting legacy. And you have to understand that you have to treat that with the utmost respect of who do you want to be? Who do you want this business to be? And you can't just get into an exit and be like, okay, I'm going to do this. Like, and it wasn't aligned from the beginning, like, or you identified that even at the end, it wasn't aligned from a corporate values perspective or from a technology perspective or strategic vision perspective. It's not good for you and it's not good for your legacy and it's not good for your people. because it's just not going to work. And a lot of times I think founders get in that world where it's like they didn't do the research up front and they didn't build the trust in all of those potential acquirers, and they get stuck with this acquirer that maybe is not the best fit for them. What happens? Everybody gets canned, you know, the product gets diluted into the offering, and then, you know, your legacy essentially is something that went away. And for me, I just think that's not the ideal situation. It doesn't matter how much money you've made. It's not the best situation for an entrepreneur.
I find that a lot of founders that I speak to are so focused on building product that they forget all of these things though, right? Like they're so focused on building product to make sure that they do what they want that they forget about the strategic steps that are involved in building the business or exiting the business. What do you say to those founders who may be listening to this thinking, I'm already strapped for time, Eric. I'm like 18 hours a day on product. How am I going to create the time to now think strategically outside of this?
Okay, so the number one thing that I think we've done well within each one of these businesses that we've been a part of is create an advisor network that actually can be an extension of you. And that is so important. I've been a founder of two and then sales leadership in two other. And each one of those, I've surrounded myself with people. And then the founders of the first two that I was with surrounded themselves with advisors that actually, you know, would help them with their like sharing values and offering that information up to potential listeners. In this business, I've identified my core six people, vetted, have known for years, who know me very well. And those six people have a different functionality and support for me personally. So I have a product guy, I have an M&A guy, I have a banker, I have a product, I have a sales VP, and I have a founder of a unicorn business. Every single one of those people are the people that take my vision and my strategy and say the same exact value proposition that I can to all of those specific arms. So that is so core because you are as good as your network is. And it's something I learned very, you know, I didn't go to an Ivy League school. I was a basketball player. I was a jock, right? But I knew that the team that I was on, and I was on some really good teams, those teams would lift us up. And I think that building network was going to be my app killer, right? If I could actually build a network that could support me and my vision and kind of what I wanted to do, then that would work out really well. And it has. And so for those that feel like they're overwhelmed, like I don't ever feel like I'm overwhelmed. I feel like I can always do more. I can always do more. Now, I also have a technical co-founder. So Jed and I have been working together, the co-founder of TechRecruit, co-founder of Postal. Jed and I have known each other for 20 years. Right. So he is the technical mind and I'm the business mind. And we come together like Voltron and boom, like we can create amazing products. But guess what? I don't have to worry about. I don't have to worry about that the product works. And guess what? He doesn't have to worry about that we can't sell the product or position the product or build amazing product. And we're a network. I'm a network of his and he's of mine. And he has his own network of professionals that can help him build world-class software. Now, that is such a key when you're finding a business to find people that fill the gaps that you have. And that's a whole other story. But by doing that, they can fill the gaps and create their own networks. You become better than just you alone trying to do this and conquer the world, you know, on your own. So I would say if there are entrepreneurs out there that have started or are currently in their process, it's not about building a board. It's about building people that you can call or text at any second of the day and they'll get back to you and do whatever you need to get done in order to make you better and make the company better. And that's what I've gotten with the Postal advisors and the TechRecruit advisors.
I love that advice. And I think what I find really valuable about that is you've incented these people as well to be that strategic arm for you so that there's also not only because they like you, but because there's something in it for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're friends, but at the end of the day, they want to make money. You know, they I mean, like, and by the way, they become better friends after you've made them more money. It's amazing how that works. Now, you know, I would say that like the folks that we have on board, they have to trust you. They have to understand that, hey, you're proving like their time is also worth a lot. These guys are executives at big businesses and super educated and also extremely decorated when you look at their backgrounds. And certainly I knew that I needed to find people that went to Harvard or went to Stanford or like has these connections of these different networks I just never had a part of, or the technology entrepreneurship, like who has more entrepreneurs than I can learn from, or, you know, CEOs that I can learn from. So all of those things are super important, but you have to know your faults. You have to understand like, where am I light? And where can I invest time in learning and educating myself with my network? And how can I educate them on my vision so they can share this across? And you got to get that set up, and you got to get people you trust. And then ultimately, you got to get them in the boat. I always talk about, hey, who is in the boat right now? Because this boat is, we're going to go to this island and then we're going to burn the ships.
Burn the boats.
Right? Burn the boats. We're going to burn that ship out. So we're all in the boat right now, and we're going to get on this island, and we have to get off this island because that thing is burned. Right. Yeah. And so everybody shares that same focus that I do that works for this company is that in 5 years, we're either going to be successful or dead. And if we don't, and it doesn't matter about pandemics or recessions or whatever, it's like you got to push through whatever is out there. We're not looking at giving this business away to VCs, and we're not looking at building, you know, a small business. We want to build a $1 billion business. And this is how we're going to get to that $1 billion business. And it's going to be $1 billion or it's going to be $0. And so they have to know that. They have to believe that. And ultimately, we have to get partners and advisors and people around us to believe that too. And by the way, the acquirers need to believe that too. They need to believe that Eric is not bullshitting. He's going to build a $1 billion company or it's going to be zero. And that statement, if you're in a market that can command that value, which we're in MarTech and sales tech can command that value, that it can be done. And yeah, that's what we're doing. That was a rant.
I love it. I love the way that that rant went. It was perfect. Something that I ask everyone on the show is, as we wrap up, what's the single biggest piece of advice that you can leave right now? And since we're talking about founders and exits, what's the single biggest piece of advice that you would leave founders today on when they think about an exit? What should they be thinking about?
The single biggest focus. So it has to be start now. Start building relationships now. And it also has to be prepared to walk away. You are going to get offers for your business if you're doing the right thing. We got 3 offers for TextRecruit before we exited, and it just wasn't the right time. It was life-changing money for myself and my founder and my family and his family, but it just wasn't the right time, and it wasn't the right partner, you know, who was trying to buy the business. And Postal's the same way. You know, we've already gotten interest from an M&A perspective, and this is not what we're trying to do right now. We are trying to build a $1 billion company. And you have to stand your ground, you have to start early, and you have to be prepared to say no.
I love that. Where can people find you online?
Postal.io. We're trying to change the sales and marketing game by creating the next Marketo for the offline world. And I think direct mail and gifting and donations, we've built a platform that is the technical automation behind all those things that connects into all the systems. And I believe that those things should be as easy as email and advertising. And we've built that system and we've launched that system. And I think it's going to be a game changer.
Amazing. For the listeners, just so that you know, I will link out to all of the resources that Eric's company does. Postal.io is an amazing platform. I am personally very excited for the potential of this company and where it's going. Eric, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your wisdom.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.